I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Black Hole Cinema and our third yearly Oscars Academy Awards special episode. We are going to pick through all of the Oscar winners and losers, talk about the ceremony itself, and maybe have a little look at the awards ceremony that everyone thinks is more important and is the more important one, the Razzies. And I'm joined for this endeavour by two gentlemen who joined me last year and indeed the year before, to talk about the Oscars. And the first one is Dan Taylor.
Hello.
And followed up by Chris Wilson.
Hello there.
Thanks for coming back on, guys. It's been a while since we did a Black Hole Cinema, hasn't it?
It is. I feel like we've slipped into a time warp where we've gone back a whole year.
Yeah.
Oh, a black hole.
Yeah.
We've come into a black
hole. Very good.
Very good. Appropriate, yeah.
It's like putting on a familiar pair of socks.
It is. And we all smell like a familiar pair of socks. Well, I do, at least. Yeah, so it's good to have you back, guys. And we're going to be trawling ourselves through the Oscar ceremony and all the nominees and everything like that, as I say. And it should be very interesting. But before that, we're just going to promote a little bit about Black Hole Cinema, because obviously we are back occasionally, and we're now part of the Black Hole Media podcast network. We've been recently releasing The Composers, which is a six-part series about film music with the venerable Sean Wilson, and that's going to continue. But until then, we will have this, and the show's kind of coming back, isn't it, Dan?
It is, absolutely, yeah. We've got some plans in the pipeline to come back later in the month with the idea of doing a fortnightly podcast. The middle-of-the-month podcast would probably be a special focusing on a specific film. You know, for example, in April, I'm sure it will be Civil War and the Marvel Universe. And the one at the end of the month will basically be a look back at all the films that have been released in that month. So we'll be releasing one right at the end of March. In fact, it might be March 31st. And that will look back at all the films that were released over the next month, including London Has Fallen, Kung Fu Panda 3, and obviously the massive juggernaut that is Batman vs Superman.
Yes, yes. It'll be nice to get some regular new film reviews for Black Hole Cinema going again, alongside all our other podcasts that I am somehow managing to do.
Juggle.
It won't last. You know, make the most of it while it's there. And yeah, you can obviously find us on iTunes if you just go to Black Hole Cinema. It'd be great if you could leave us at least a 5-star ranking, and I'm being optimistic with 5 stars, but a ranking of some sort.
6 stars, well, preferable.
6 stars, ideally, yes. And if you want to write us a little review to say how much you love us, that'd be great. But if not, don't worry about it. Just pop over there and subscribe would be enough. So enough of the spiel. Let's get down to brass tacks. The Oscars, gents. 2016, the 88th Academy Awards, hosted this year by Chris Rock after a 10 or 11 year absence. Let's have a little chat about the ceremony. What did we make of this one?
Well, Chris Rock's presenting skills is a darn sight better than it was last time round. I think he was obviously more comfortable with the whole ceremony. And I don't, he does hosting on stuff like Saturday Night Live, I believe, and stuff like that. But he's not usually a kind of front man as such. So I think, you know, previously when he did it, he was a bit out of his comfort zone. And obviously, for somebody doing it for the first time, that's not used to hosting such a big scale event, it probably was quite nerve wracking for him. But this time, he seemed a lot more comfortable. And I guess with all the kind of controversy that he could kind of dip in and out of and make light of, I think that helped as well. And you know, the ceremony dealt with it quite well. There were some moments where I thought it was a bit, you know, close to the line, particularly the Angela Bassett Jack Black sketch, which I definitely thought they were going to rib Will Smith, but they didn't. But yeah, otherwise, I think they dealt with it quite well.
I think that Chris Rock did pitch it. Yeah, right. I mean, I did think his speech was good. His opening speech, it was a bit close to the bone at times, and you know, he did it in such a cheerful, sort of disarming way. And some of the reactions in the audience were brilliant, because there was people really did not know whether to laugh. That's quite a lot of what he was saying. Such a, you know, when he turns around and says the only black guys, you know, on their way to the Oscars are the ones being shot on the way to the cinema and stuff like that.
God, that was a weird one, because he like started clapping.
Yeah, I know.
And then like, wait, did we beat that? Are we happy this happened?
It was great. It was, are we looking like smug white privileged people at this point? It was not. He did put him a bit on the ropes, and he did it in such a, you know, a happy way. He got away with it. So I mean, I was laughing. I laughed at a lot of what he did throughout the ceremony. So I think it worked. And you know, he must have thought, when all this Oscars so white stuff was kicking off, he must have thought, oh, this is fantastic. This could not have been better for me, because it gave him his entire show on a silver platter, didn't it?
Yeah, I think they, when the controversy happened and they realised, well, hang on a minute, Chris Rock is the host, I think that's when they sort of played to it quite a lot, because the controversy never really died down. Whereas last year, a sort of similar movement started, if you remember, and it died away very quickly. But this year, because you've got Chris Rock hosting, and obviously a lot of his humour is based around race anyway, so I think they've really played to that, cynically speaking, in hope of like getting more people tuning in for the controversy. I mean, obviously the ratings have come out now and it didn't work, but I think they played to it because Chris Rock was the host.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And what do we make, just while we're on the subject, what do we make of the Oscar so white thing? You know, I mean, I've got my opinions on it, but what do you guys make of the whole phenomenon?
Like I say, it was contrived in the end. I think they tried to spin it as a PR move, and I also think it's a sort of a two-parter PR move, considering next year. I think next year comes like the positive spin, and then people tune in because of that. But like I said, I think they were hoping that people tune in this year for controversy, and then tune in next year for the retribution, and it's sort of not worked out that way yet.
I do feel like it goes back and forth all the time. You know, the year before, 12 Years a Slave won. I don't think anybody was nominated of colour. And then, obviously, that year, was it 2014 now, that obviously cleared up. And so it kind of was like, oh, well, they're taking us seriously now. And I don't think that was it. It was because it won on merit. It didn't win because it was a film, you know, directed by a black guy with, you know, a heavy black cast about, you know, black issues. It wasn't about that at all. It was because it was a good film directed by, you know, a quality director, you know, with a really, really strong cast. And that's why it won, you know. And then you've got this year, you know, you've got Will Smith's Concussion, which I think might have even been released too late to be, you know, to qualify. And even that, you know, I've heard the reviews coming out of that saying, you know, it's okay, but it's nothing special. And, you know, honestly, Will Smith hasn't really made anything stand out in, you know, in a number of years after Earth.
Don't. We'll get into the Razzies in a bit.
You know, and, you know, I'm not saying Will Smith's the only black actor on the planet. But the thing is, obviously, he's the one that made the biggest outcry, and it just looks a bit like sour milk in some respects.
I think the problem I have, I mean, you kind of hit on it, really. The problem I have is that the argument has been about diversity and about more black people being nominated. But it's not about... It doesn't seem to be an argument about their merit. And this is my problem. Michael B. Jordan, I think, should have got a nomination. I'd have given him one over a couple of the actors. Maybe Matt Damon, although he was very good.
Mm.
I think he should have got a nomination. I think Ryan Coogler deserved a directorial nomination. I'd have put him over Lenny Abrahamson, personally, for me, right? Because Creed...
No, I disagree with that one.
Okay, well, fair enough. But like, I think Creed deserved... It didn't deserve to be best film, but I think it deserved for Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan. I would have put them in there. That's an oversight. But honestly, I mean, and there's an argument for Idris Elba as well, for Beast of No Nation and that kind of thing. But the point is this. There were more films that were really good, that had a primarily white cast, than black films, than films with black characters. And that may be a controversial thing to say, but tough. Because it's true. And it's not the argument as to whether or not there's not enough black actors in these kind of roles is different. I completely agree with that. I think that's absolutely true. The argument over whether they should be nominated because they're black, for me, that's ridiculous. They should be nominated because they're good enough. And 12 Years a Slave was a perfect example of a film that was about black culture, horrible black culture, obviously, with the slavery, but it was so good, and it deserved everything. That's my problem. And I think this is where it's become an argument that it's about tokenism, which I think is horrible. They shouldn't be there because they're black. Race shouldn't come into it.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think the problem, really, and I think so on that call, I think, was it Morgan Freeman that said it, but the problem starts at the beginning, is that there's no films being made basically for black actors to be in. You know, it starts at the very beginning from who's producing it, who's directing it, who's casting it. Because, you know, Hollywood, it's still an all white boys club at the end of the day.
Oh, I'm not denying that, definitely, yeah.
And there's got to be something done that breaks that. And then from that, you know, the ethnic minorities then are able to get nominated on merit and tokenism, as you say.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's maybe it's just the roles they're taking, but obviously particularly the comedic actors of colour are going into what can only be considered as darn awful films. They're not just bad comedies, they're badly made films. And I don't know if that's just all the roles that are available for them, and that maybe that has some truth in it, probably. But, you know, if they're making those films that they're... And they're completely black. They're black on purpose. And on the opposite side, they've then got the token white guy in it. And so it's both sides, in some respects, can be as bad as each other. And I don't necessarily think the Oscars are to blame for the lack of, you know, black diversity. It does start, the root problem is at the bottom, is the fact that there are not enough roles available. Yeah. There are not enough actors coming through. They're perhaps not getting the kind of training and support that they need to develop their craft. And that probably comes from the whole social economic kind of framework of what America is that it's all rich white guys and stuff like that, and you know, so it's just an overall cultural problem. It's not just an issue in Hollywood, it's not just an issue for the Oscars, it's an issue kind of, you know, globally on involving everything.
The Oscars has always been a good drum to bang issues on, isn't it, really, you know? And that it was always going to... And Chris, I think he's absolutely right. I think it's a heavy PR thing in the end, and I think there's certain people cashing in on it, really. But I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of the argument. I'm not interested in it. It's not what it should be about. And what you've said is absolutely right, Dan. It should be about the grassroots, these guys being given the roles. It shouldn't be about whether or not your black people get nominated. That, like you said, that will come from the other. But the other obvious controversy was... The gaffes from the repeated gaffes from Sam Smith, who put his foot right fucking in it, didn't he? Oh. More than once.
He didn't only win for something that everyone was like, what?
What? Shit.
Just it's not even a good pop song, let alone a good Bond song, let alone a good song for film. It was, well, to be fair, I wasn't really familiar with anything else in that category.
Yeah, there was that guy who sang who looked like he had a hand on his head, that was his hair. I don't know who he was, but that was for Shades of Grey. He looked ridiculous.
But yeah. just it didn't help that it didn't necessarily deserve to win, and it is a difficult one because Bonzongs are difficult because they can be so fantastic. You know, you only have to look at the fact that he was following Adele. That's kind of what he's following. You know, so from that point of view, you know, it was always fighting an uphill battle. But I just remember when it was released, nobody liked it. No one likes it. And there's a lot of people that go, the first bit of the film was very good, and then Sam Smith starts singing, and the whole film kind of gradually falls away. And
I don't necessarily think it's a bad song. I think it's the wrong person singing it. That's what I've said from the very beginning. You know, that song. Mm-hmm. If you gave that song to a Shirley Bassey female voice, it would be a lot better, I think. So he's just the wrong person, and he proved it because he was bloody awful. When he sang it live, and he even admitted it afterwards, he was terrible. He was so terrible. Mm. And but then obviously it wasn't that he put his foot in before. It was for him saying he was the first openly gay man to win an Oscar for music. And he clearly has never heard of Elton John, you know, for a start. And it's just, it just typifies somebody who has bought into his own hype, I think.
So far up his own ass.
Yeah. And then did you hear what happened afterwards in the after parties?
Well, there was lots of tweeting going on.
Yeah.
Because obviously Dustin Lance, well, he's going to be Tom Daly's husband one day, isn't he? So that's what we call him Daly already.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. He obviously was the first person, I think, that tweeted, was like, all right, come on, you know. There were other people. I made milk, for God's sake.
Well, yeah, and somebody else said in one of the after parties, apparently, to him, that there was a... Did you ever? I can't remember his name now, but did you ever hear of Michael something who wrote the songs to the Little Mermaid and things like that back in the early 90s? And he went, "Oh yeah, I'd love to spend the night with him." The man died of AIDS like in 1991 or something like that, and then everyone went, "Sam, you just know my call, don't you?
Put down the champagne, Sam."
Yeah. Just oh dear. A less controversial one, although one that I think from the comedy's perspective was Sacha Baron Cohen sneaking Ali G in, which apparently Isla Fisher was backstage putting his beard on because they said to him, no jokes, no pranks, Sasha, you go on there as yourself, apparently. This is what's been said anyway. But then he came on as Ali G and resurrected Ali G. What do we think of Ali G?
It says a lot that we've got Grinsby coming out in America soon, and it's already buried it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It didn't come on as Grinsby.
Well, I've got to say, given we're on the subject, Chris, you're
not seen it yet.
You're a man. You're a resident of Grinsby. Yeah. Yeah, you've not seen it. Are you planning to?
Well, yeah, I've seen it on Friday, but I'm waiting for my whole family to get their acts together so I can go see it with them.
Yeah. Have there been picket lines and all kinds of things?
Nah. It was a story that our local paper they were quite offended for a long time. But then the film came out and a load of local people said, yeah, we quite liked it actually, it was funny. And then they've not mentioned it again, even though it's not even been a week yet since it's been out.
Does anyone really care? This is the thing. I'm not sure people really care, do they? Maybe not even people in Grimsby. You've got more important things to worry about, probably, haven't you?
The thing is, about people in Grimsby, they realise it's a shithole, but it's our shithole, if you get what I mean. Yeah. It's home, but we acknowledge, it could be better, but it's just a film, really.
There'll be people listening to this podcast going, didn't even know Grimsby was a place, to be fair.
This is it. But I thought it was a bit strained as Ali G. But we're talking about all the bad stuff. Were there any highlights for you guys? Was there anything that worked in terms of the actual ceremony?
Well, I started skipping quite quickly, so this is the first time I've actually watched a lot of the Academy Awards in preparation for this podcast, and I sort of got a bit bored halfway through because I was thinking, great for like handing out awards, this will be over soon, but suddenly on comes a song and on comes the reel about one of the best films, and it just gets a bit procedural, you know what I mean? And it just gets a bit boring after a while. And going back to Chris Rock as well, the jokes got a bit samey, and I was like, yeah, lost interest now.
I did like his interviewing of the public and giving their Oscar speeches and things like that. I thought that was quite good. I thought he pitched that quite well. And I think one of my favourite bits was Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. They were a great double act. I don't know if you saw
that. Oh, yeah, but that one's quite good, yeah. That's quite a funny one.
They were funny, you know. It was like, why, these two need to do a comedy together.
Well, after seeing The Big Short, I didn't even know Gosling was funny.
Yeah,
didn't know, realise how funny he was.
He's got a good talent for that, actually. You should give it a go.
Yeah.
Mm. Played deadpan for the last few years, drive and lack of personality type roles, that suddenly actually to see him crack a smile was quite nice.
Yeah, definitely. I think as well, I would say now, I really want Louis C.K. to host this next year. Because his bit was really good. And, you know, he's good anyway, isn't he, really? But I think he'd do it well, Louis C.K. Mm.
Well, anyone's better than Ellen.
That's true.
Like, you look back at it now and you think, the Ellen selfie, for fuck's sake.
No. Just, it was,
that's,
yeah.
That's an Oscar low.
Bring back Seth MacFarlane, I say. Just dead silence. My favourite bit of the Oscars actually was when Jared Leto was out and his jokes died.
Yeah,
I just found it hilarious.
That was great because we talked, didn't we? Was it last year or the year before about how much of a tit he is?
It was a year before because he won Best Supporting Actor. That's for right. Dallas Buyers Club, didn't he? And I just absolutely hate him because I hate his band as well.
Yeah, he chose to talk about the plight of the Ukraine, didn't he? And we were like, fuck off, Jared.
You're just as Jesus, fuck off.
Yeah.
Whereas DiCaprio talks about melting ice caps and everyone's like, oh, isn't he amazing?
Yeah. Well, he's more charming, isn't he, than Jared Leto? That's the thing. So he gets away with it.
Yeah, but I did see the thing, sorry, about DiCaprio, where someone published what is roughly the carbon footprint it must have cost to do the Revenant. Yeah, was it Argentina they filmed? Getting like 439 crew members over to Argentina and back. Yeah.
Well, from Canada, because that's where they were originally filming. That's where some of it's filmed, but it didn't quite work out because it wasn't cold enough.
that is quietly, ignored, isn't it? I think the other joke that died on its ass was the Stacey Dash thing, wasn't it?
Oh God!
I didn't know who that was at first. I was like, who is that? And then afterwards, I was just
hair from Clueless.
That and that was just painful because everyone, even if they got it, I think they were like, nah,
I had to read about it afterwards because apparently. She's a pundit on Fox News now, is quite controversial views, and it just didn't work.
No. I think it made everyone just go, who the fuck is this? Which they've been doing on Twitter for a while, but I think it just cemented that. It's like, who the fuck are you? Go away. Finally, I think one of the nice things was Dave Grohl singing over the In Memoriam. I thought that was good. I thought he did that very well. And it just seemed a very long In Memoriam, didn't it, this year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, everyone died this year.
Well, they did. Yeah. And they're still dying.
It's like I remember watching the BAFTA one. It was just a face after... Like, usually you watch it, particularly obviously the Oscar one, because, you get the Americans put in that you don't recognise. And usually you sit there and watch it, don't know them, don't know them, don't know them. But literally, pretty much everybody were like, oh,
yeah.
Oh. So it was quite a hard watch again this year.
Yeah, it was sad, and I was quite happy that Leonard Nimoy got the final one. That was nice because I thought that'd be Bowie, to be fair.
I did too.
But there you go. But no, it was. I thought it was okay. I think I was definitely skipping bits, and some bits, typical Oscars really. Some bits worked okay, some bits fell on its face, and. It's still too long. Even though it's probably a bit shorter than it used to be, there seems to be less pointless musical numbers than they used to have. But it's still, at nearly 3 hours, it's still too long. It could still do with shaving a good half hour, if not more. But before we get into talking about the actual nominations and awards and winners, we're going to take a slight swerve to talk about the ones that really matter, the Razzies. Do you guys know any of the Razzies results or any of the films nominated?
Yes, I am looking. Yeah, I've looked through now, and I'm like that. Fair enough. Well done. Yep.
I think I got lucky this year. I think I avoided all of the ones that won.
Oh.
Hilariously, I think I had to see them all.
I've seen most of these. It's let's go through some of them. Let's go through the main ones. Worst screenplay went to 50 Shades of Grey. 50 Shades of Grey will be a recurring theme here. And that was up against, again, pretty much the same films throughout all of this, which is Fantastic Four, Jupiter Ascending, Paul Blart...
Oh, I did see that one.
Yeah, yeah. Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, and Pixels. So...
I think Jupiter Ascending in screenplays is a little unfair. I think it was just an overall, you know, explosion of shit on screen. Not necessarily. I'm sure on page it read quite well.
Well, maybe.
It might. But have. Fifty Shades of Grey, Paul Blart, fucking Mall Cop 2, and Pixels definitely read incredibly badly and looked as badly on screen as they did on page, on paper. And Fantastic Four, I don't know how you can quite say worse screenplay, because obviously if the rumours are true, hardly any of the actual screenplay ended up on screen. It was mostly just made up.
I also think it's a bit unfair to give worst director to Josh Trank, because he was a victim of the studio system. It wasn't particularly his fault completely. When you've also got in there Andy Fickman, who did Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, and Sam Taylor Johnson... the Wachowskis, but crucially Tom Six. Surely for Human Centipede 3, that's a clear winner. But you know,
he'd have probably turned up and accepted the award as well.
Yeah, more than likely. For worst screen combo, these are quite funny actually. All four Fantastics from Fantastic Four.
And I think that's unfair on Michael B. Jordan, to be fair. Well, Jamie Bell, because he was human.
Yeah.
You know, for only like an hour.
Yeah. Again, I don't think it's really the actor's fault. Johnny Depp and his glued-on mustache for Mordecai. Kevin James and either his Segu or his glued-on mustache. Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2, and Adam Sandler and any pair of shoes. The cobbler. But the winners were Jamie Dornan and Dakota Johnson for 50 Shades of Grey.
I think I do remember us discussing their lack of chemistry. So pretty fair. But as you said, you know. I think it's unfair to have the Fantastic Four actors in there. I'd have much rather seen, Kevin James and Adam Sandler for fucking Pixels.
Well, speaking of Pixels, that's one on Worst Supporting Actress, which was for Michelle Monaghan. Also, Julianne Moore for Seventh Son, Amanda Seyfried for Love the Coopers and Pan. Rooney Mara for Pan. So Rooney Mara has the distinction of being nominated in both the worst and best this year. But the winner was Kaylee Cuoco Sweeting for both Alvin and the Chipmunks Road Chip and The Wedding Ringer. Definitely for The Wedding Ringer, because she was terrible in that, which was a terrible film.
Yeah, poor Julianne Moore as well, following an Oscar win with an almost Razzie.
It was bizarre, because it's been one of those. That was the start of last year, wasn't it? With because Julianne Moore, obviously, and Eddie Redmayne were both
Oscar winners.
They obviously won their categories, whereas at the same time during their campaign before the Oscars, they both had two of the worst films of the year come out. It was a good thing for both of them. It didn't derail it like, I don't know, Norbit did for Eddie Murphy.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Eddie Redmayne, of course, won Jupiter Ascending for Worst Supporting Actor with his painful villain voice. Which, to be fair, I think it's unfair, because I think he's brilliant. He's the only thing that kept me interested in that film for after a while. When it just comes on like this, I'm going to kill you all. I was going, great. He's great. He's just terrible.
I think it was a great representation of someone struggling with constipation.
Worst actress went to Dakota Johnson for 50 Shades of Grey. She was up against luminaries such as Mila Kunis for Jupiter Ascending, Gwyneth Paltrow for Mordecai, Katherine Heigl for Home Sweet Hell, never even heard of it, and Jennifer Lopez for The Boy Next Door, which I might have given it to J-Lo, because that film was terrible.
Yeah, I saw and reviewed Home Sweet Hell last year, and I think that's unfair for it to be. It wasn't a great film, but you know, I don't think it's necessarily Boy Next Door or Mordecai kind of bad.
Yeah,
so.
Again, I think it's slightly unfair to give worst actor to Jamie Dornan as well. We're not given he's up against Kevin James, mm-hmm. Adam Sandler, and especially Johnny Depp, who frankly deserved it for Mordecai, really, which was diabolical Terry Thomas impression, which was you know,
and Channing Tatum actually kind of personified all the reasons why I don't think he's a very good actor in Jupiter Ascending. So, you know, when everyone goes, oh, you know, Channing Tatum, yeah, no, he's all right. You know, he's done some good stuff. And they go, well, Jupiter Ascending, that he did that. So,
yeah, he's never going to be let off that one. Worst Picture had, for nominations, Pixels, Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, obviously recurring themes there, Jupiter Ascending. But the winners, the joint winners, were Fantastic Four and 50 Shades of Grey. Now, again, I think it's unfair to really lambast Fantastic Four like this because... Mm. I didn't think it was very good, and the last half hour especially is terrible because it's a different film. But that is just a really sad example of a film that just got destroyed while making it. I really think, you know, when you've got films being made like Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, which is just pathetic, you know, that kind of thing is worse. I mean, the Fantastic Four at least had some ideas and some good actors and things. So I think it's just unfair to leap on that bandwagon.
Yeah, I when we reviewed the film, I remember saying, yes, it's not a very good film, but it's not the worst film of the year. It's certainly not the worst film of all time.
No.
So, you know, for it to be joint winner next to 50 Shades of Grey, and even then 50 Shades of Grey, as shit as it is, there are people out there that like it and enjoy it, and they would probably defend the fact that it's you know, probably will say it's a good film, but I think even people that like Pixels or Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 are going to agree it's a crap film.
Well, also, this gives them a bit too much currency because they're just dull, you know. And I would rather see the Razzies really go to, you know, be for films that are like Troll 2 levels of bad that people actually want to go and watch. These are films that I just never want to see again, not because they're terrible. They're just shit. They're just boring. There's nothing to them. And it's just like, give me some Razzie pictures that are really diabolical, but fun diabolical. I mean, how Unfinished Business isn't in here as well, I do not know. How Vince Vaughn didn't get in here, I do not know. It's just, it's bizarre. Maybe it wasn't eligible, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's because the Razzies these days tend to jump on the bandwagon of what's been seen as really shit over here. So Unfinished Business, really, it was a blip. You know, no one hardly remembers it, whereas all the films nominated for Worst Picture at the point they were released, everyone was talking about how shit they were.
Yeah.
To be fair, the one that, you know, kind of on the category you're kind of talking about, ones that are really bad that you've kind of got to watch it, the kind of only one there is Human Centipede 3. You've kind of got to watch it to kind of see how bad... It's like, just Human Centipede in general, the whole franchise, you've kind of got to watch it to see what people are talking about.
Well, I've seen the first two, unfortunately. So yeah, eventually I'm going to have to sit through this, because if I've put myself through number two, which is one of the most vile pieces of filmmaking I've ever seen, I've got to finish it now. You know, I just have to, unfortunately. There was one good piece of news, though, for the Razzie Redeemer Award, which featured Elizabeth Banks as a nominee for multiple hit movies this year. M. Night Shyamalan, perennial Razzie nominee, and winner this year, director of The Visit, which wasn't half bad. Will Smith for following up After Earth with Concussion. Although there's an argument that there's an argument he had a concussion while he was making After Earth, but that's another story. And the winner was somebody who frankly shouldn't be winning in this side of the fence. Sylvester Stallone, all-time Razzie champ, award contender for Creed. Now, it's such a shame that Sly has only got one award from here, because he deserved more. But at least he's got something this year. But yeah, it was not the best Razzies, really. But yeah, so moving on, let's get into the actual Oscars and the actual awards, because we obviously picked out in advance, we put on the blog our own predictions, didn't we? For quite a lot of the nominated categories, not all of them, but quite a lot of them. So what I thought we'd do is we'd go through in the order that they went through in the Oscars and pick them out. So, we start with Best Original Screenplay. So let's have a look at what we all put for Best Original Screenplay. Yeah, we all went for Spotlight.
Yeah.
So, well done, we got that right. That was up against Straight Outta Compton, Bridge of Spies, Ex Machina, and Inside Out. So I think that was a deserved winner, because I think the script for Spotlight was cracking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. I don't really think there was anything that kind of came close. Then there were lots of people saying, oh, it would have been nice for Inside Out to have won it, because I believe it would have been the first animated film to have got a writing credit. Bridge of Spies is fine, it's okay, but it's nothing special. Ex Machina, what really makes that film is obviously the visual effects and the acting of the particularly of Vikander and Oscar Isaacs. Straight Outta Compton, I guess that probably was the second one on that list, maybe. But Spotlight was definitely the standout winner.
Yeah, I agree. Forensic script, but a really, really tight one and a good one. The next one was Best Adapted Screenplay, and for that one, we went for... Dan and I went for The Martian by Drew Goddard, and Chris, you went for Room by Emma Donoghue, adapting her own novel.
That is.
None of us were right, because The Big Short won. Do you guys think that should have won this category?
No. Bear in mind, I've only read for Room in its original form. Well, the total life, I've also read The Martian, but I wasn't a fan of The Martian, actually. In terms of actual quality of script, I'd say Room was the better film, definitely. But Big Short, I thought it was a bit patronising in places, and I think that was the point.
Mm.
I just don't think that the elements that it was trying to juggle worked that well.
I think part of the reason it won this is because of the source material it was adapting. Obviously it's from, maybe I'm completely wrong, but from what I know, it's a non-fiction book, and it's quite depthy. You know, it's got quite a lot of information in there to kind of take in, and it's a good solid breakdown of actually what happened. So to then take that and to put it into an entertainment piece, which The Big Short was, I had a laugh watching it. To make something something that was actually quite a big deal, back in 2005, 2006, to make it actually almost lighthearted in places, was quite an achievement. And because it didn't necessarily win anywhere else, I think I'm glad it picked something up. But considering what else was in this category, this was such a tight category in comparison to, I think, the original screenplay, that maybe it could have really gone in any kind of direction, I think.
Well, the other ones involved, obviously, were Brooklyn and Carol. Now, Carol. The Big Short is the only one I haven't seen, if I'm honest. I wanted The Martian because I think, having read the book, which is also really good, I think the script really adapted that book well, and it was great in that sense, and it really rollicked along.
Just about The Martian, I thought the screenplay was really good. Because I said I didn't like the novel, but they did a fantastic job with the screenplay, I will say.
Yeah, he adapted that really, really well. And I think, however, I might otherwise have given this to Carol, because even though I don't think Carol is as great a film as a lot of people say, I think its script was good. So... It was a tight one. It was a very tight one. I do agree. Probably one of the tightest, actually, in the entire lot. This.
Mm. Yeah.
Moving on, the next one was Best Supporting Actress, which is quite a big one. And for this, we went for Chris. You went for Jason Lee, as did I in The Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
And Dan, you went for Alicia Vikander. So that's one for you. You win.
you win
on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I will say though, I've got a real issue with this category in general this year, and I don't know if I've maybe thought about it before, but the fact is Alicia Vikander was as much the lead in The Danish Girl. In fact, it was almost as much her film as it was Lily's film, so I think it was unfair necessarily for her to be in this category, where she could quite easily have been in the Best Actress category.
I think she felt strategic though. Yeah. Whenever they're like putting forth their nominations, I think they realise they should probably have a better chance there.
Yeah, maybe. But it's the same as Kate Winslet as well. You know, obviously, it was a film about Steve Jobs, and Fassbender was fantastic in it. But again, Kate Winslet played as big a role in the film in general. She probably had, maybe not exactly the same amount of screen time, but was on screen, you know, for a good 75% of the film. Mm. So for those two, in comparison to Rachel McAdams, for example, who, you know, was just part of the machine, and the same could be said about Jennifer Jason Leigh. She was just part of this ensemble cast. You know, Vikander and Winslet, and Mara to an extent, but obviously that means them putting her up against Cate Blanchett. You know, they didn't really play supporting roles in those films at all.
Yeah, I mean, again, Danish Girl I haven't seen yet, so I can't comment on Vikander. I like her as an actress. I think she's good. I think she's got a great future. Mm-hmm. But I can't comment on whether she should have won. I think what I liked about Jennifer Jason Leigh was the fact that she was the central sort of cog in the machine of The Hateful Eight. And even though she didn't always get a massive amount to do, she went through a fucking real gut-wrenching ride through that film, and she snaps into pure, you know, viciousness quite brilliantly, you know, in the face of everything. And the rest of them were in quite functional roles, like, you know, Rachel McAdams was good in Spotlight, but like you said, she's part of a machine. Rooney Mara,
I actually think she was the weakest part of that film.
Well, she was part of a bigger cog. There were stronger actors. Rooney Mara, I just don't think she's at the level of this, really, for me.
I think she's just not quite got there yet.
No.
You know, I think she's not much older than Alicia Vikander, but Alicia Vikander is already doing top quality work. Mm. You know, I guess in the same vein as, you know, how Jennifer Lawrence has very quickly gone from supporting actor to, you know, to best actress, and, you know, is one of the biggest young actors, you know, in Hollywood right now. And I actually think Vikander is going to be maybe not equal to her, because she hasn't got that big franchise under her belt yet. But, you know, she's got a very promising future, which I think, for whatever reason, Rooney Mara is struggling with, because I think she's an equally good actress. She's just not quite got that role yet.
Mm, yeah, so it was an interesting category. But, yeah, I can't comment on whether Vikander deserved it. I'll find out soon. But I think a lot of people would have gone with her, really.
She was good in a subpar film.
Yeah.
But she was definitely by far
the best thing about it.
That's the general consensus.
And also, you know, you've kind of got to take into account Ex Machina as well. You know, people that say, oh no, it's just on the film, I think that's wrong. You know, at the end of the day, Ex Machina is also been nominated this year, so it kind of comes under the 2015-16 brackets.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, you know, we should think about these films, because as we mentioned earlier about, you know, how, you know, a bad film can potentially affect an award-winning performance. You know, on the same token, an equally good performance can then promote you above everybody else in that category.
Definitely, definitely. The next one was a slam dunk, really. Best costume design. And Chris didn't vote for this one, but Dan and
I didn't realise it was mandatory, in all fairness.
I just picked and choose random categories I had a good shout on.
You both should have known better, frankly.
I would have picked Mad Max for record.
Yeah, okay. Jenny Bevan won for Mad Max. That's what both of us said. You know, absolute slam dunk, really, against Carol, Cinderella, the Danish Girl, and the Revenant.
No contest.
I did quite like the way she came up on stage, rocking like a leather jacket, not really giving much of a shit.
She did the same with the BAFTAs. I thought it was hilarious. And actually, Stephen Fry took the piss out of her as well on the BAFTAs.
Yeah, she was the bag lady.
The crazy bag lady,
And the poor man was hounded off Twitter for it, even though they're mates and she took it as a joke. Idiots.
But in this category, there was nothing particularly special, particularly about Danish Girl Cinderella and Carol. They, you know, very, you know, yes, they look very nice, but there's nothing unique about them. No. Whereas obviously the costumes in Mad Max, and to a degree The Revenant, because obviously it is more of a period piece, you know, there's a little bit more going on, and it's not just about sparkles and glitter.
No, exactly. Next up, we had production design, best production design, which Chris and I, Dan didn't vote for this one, but Chris and I both said Mad Max Fury Road again, and Mad Max Fury Road won again. I think there was some good production design, I think, with some of these. You know, Bridge of Spies, The Danish Girl, The Martian, The Revenant. I'm not taking anything away from those, but Mad Max was such a unique, amazing visual spectacle that I don't think this had to go anywhere else, did it?
No, about to say, again, no contest.
Well, exactly.
I think even though I didn't submit them, you know, when looking through, Mad Max kind of ticked all of the kind of technical boxes pretty much.
Yeah.
That's exactly kind of what it went on to do.
Absolutely, absolutely. The next one was Best Makeup and Hair, which, because we're not girls, none of us bothered to vote for. that one for Mad Max Fury Road against the 100-year-old man who climbed out of a window and disappeared, and The Revenant. But yeah, again, another slam dunk. Let's not even really bother talking much about that one. Best Cinematography is the next one. Now, Chris and I both said Emmanuel Lubezki for The Revenant. Dan, you went for John Seale for Mad Max Fury Road, which I think was more than fair enough. Lubezki won for this one. And I would say, again, there was some good ones here. I mean, that you could argue for The Hateful Eight as well, really. And I think...
Yeah, but... So in terms of categories, you'd say this is probably the strongest out of all of them for a whole night.
Absolutely, because Carol was there as well, and Sicario. Sicario didn't get much love, did it, really?
No, this is just a shame, because it was one of the best films of last year, in my opinion.
I think it comes down to who that cinematographer was.
Yeah, Roger Deakins, wasn't it?
And, you know, he's been snubbed time and time again.
19 times now.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, really?
That's what I mean. And the fact is, Lubezki's won three times in a row. Was it for Gravity, Birdman, and The Revenant, I think, now. So he's won, you know, three times on the trot. You know, is Deakins ever going to bag one, you know, himself? And, you know, maybe he made the wrong choice this year. Sicario was a good film, but as we said, hasn't got a lot of love.
Which is baffling to me. It really is.
Yeah. It could be one that gets you know, a retrospective. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, I think it will. Next up, we have Best Editing, which was between The Big Short, Mad Max Fury Road, The Revenant, Spotlight, and Star Wars The Force Awakens. What did you guys go for editing?
I actually thought Star Wars might nick this one. Simply because I didn't know if it would get anything else. And I kind of thought that the Academy would want to give it something, and it didn't.
Chris and I both went for Mad Max Fury Road, which won for Margaret Sixel, which I can see what you mean, Dan, to be fair, but I think I can't see past Mad Max for this.
No.
I mean, it was so amazingly put together. Yeah.
There's a fantastic video online that's just got up comparing the editor of Fury Road to four different films, and what this person has done is it's sped up the footage by 10 times and the film still makes sense sped up.
Wow.
Whereas all the other ones is just like a jumbled assortment of images, and I think that's where Mad Max is so great with the editing in that it's just so smooth all the way through. It's very precise.
Well, yeah. Interesting thing about Margaret Sixel is obviously she is actually George Miller's wife.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
So fact that he didn't win, it's nice that his missus got something. Yeah. and actually, she, very, very interesting woman about how she edits. She edits completely silent. She doesn't have any noise, dialogue, nothing. She edits completely looking at imagery, and that's how she puts the film together. So actually then when best sound mixing and best sound editing come along, they do their job and put it together afterwards, looking at the imagery that she's put together, meaning that there is, you know, I guess there's less kind of group work going on, but actually it means you can appreciate the individual effort that little bit more.
Well, that's a good cue to bring those in, actually. Best sound editing and best sound mixing, which kind of tie in together. And Mad Max cleaned up again for those. Mm-hmm. And we said the same. Chris and I both went for that. I don't know what you were going for, Dan, but it was...
Definitely the same. Yeah,
yeah, The Martian, The Revenant, Sicario, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and Bridge of Spies for sound mixing as well. Mm. But the same kind of suspects, really. And, yeah, Mad Max, again, couldn't really see past that one.
Does anyone know the difference between sound editing and sound mixing yet?
I think I have watched a video last year, kind of after we had that conversation.
Can you remember?
God knows what it was. No, I'll try and find the video so we can put it on the blog. So we all know the difference.
Yeah, see if you can dig it out. The next major one was best visual effects, and Chris and I both went for Mad Max Fury Road, but this one threw a curveball because out of that, The Martian, The Revenant, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Ex Machina won. So, yeah. What do we think of that one?
Surprised, but I'm happy because it's a good film, yeah. Mm.
Again, kind of going and doing a little bit of research into this one again, it's the work that went into Ex Machina is, you know, mind-blowing. The fact is that the only thing that they use of Alicia Vikander is her face the whole film. Even when she looks human, it's not. It's all visual effects. They don't use her hands, her feet, her torso. All they use is that tiny little bit of face that we get kind of throughout the film. Everything else is visual effects, and you know, you forget about all the backgrounds, that the building that they use is actually a hotel in a city somewhere. So they've stripped all that back and kind of created their own kind of universe. And while obviously the likes of Star Wars and Mad Max do that as well, you know, both of those are kind of relying on location a lot of the time, I suspect, to kind of use that as kind of their backdrop, whereas Ex Machina is almost completely digitally created.
Yeah, I think that it was up against some stiff competition, so it did well to win here.
Absolutely.
But I see virtue in that, definitely. And it was a good film, you know. It was a... I didn't love it as much as some people, but I think it was a really interesting movie, and it was a very defiant movie in terms of what it was saying. So I think it's nice to see it pick up something, really.
Yeah.
Best animated short. We didn't vote for this one, but this was a list with Prologue, Sanjay Super Team, We Can't Leave Without Cosmos, World of Tomorrow, and Bear Story, which eventually won. I haven't seen any of them except Sanjay Super Team, because that was in front of Inside Out, I think. And yeah. I thought that was really nice, and it's a shame that didn't win, actually. But have you guys seen any of these?
Other than Sanjay's, no. Bear Story. Another little tidbit is that it was the first ever Chilean film to win an Oscar. So there we go.
Oh, that's nice. That's good. Good. Well done, Chile. Yeah, exactly. There's diversity in a nutshell. Best animated film. We all said Inside Out, and it was always a slam dunk again, really. This was up against Anomalisa, Boy in the World, Shaun the Sheep, the movie, and When Marnie Was There. So not a particularly strong amount of competition, and yeah, there was no seeing past this, was there?
No, I think When Marnie Was There was probably the only competition it had.
I wanted Shaun the Sheep to win.
being the final Studio Ghibli film, I thought maybe but I just it wasn't just a kids film, you know. It goes past being a best animated film. There were lots of people that said it should have been nominated for best film as well.
Yeah.
And I couldn't argue with them. You know, it was a fantastic film that kind of transcended being just a kids movie. Ultimately, it was released at the same time as Minions. Well, they were in the same kind of season, and I remember having Minions on in one screen and Inside Out on in the other, and seeing the reactions of the parents coming out of both films, the complete opposite, you know, coming out of Minions being almost feeling like they've been unbearable excruciating pain and teeth pulled out, and coming out of Inside Out enjoying it probably more than the kids they were taking. A definite winner.
It's good. I'm glad it did. The next category is, for me, the most contentious. This is Best Supporting Actor. Now, the nominations for this one were Christian Bale for The Big Short, Tom Hardy for The Revenant, Mark Ruffalo for Spotlight, Mark Rylance for Bridge of Spies, and Sylvester Stallone for Creed. Now, Chris and I both went for Stallone for Creed. Mm-hmm. Dan, you went for Mark Ruffalo.
Did.
Now, Mark Rylance won. Now, I haven't seen Bridge of Spies, but I haven't seen The Big Short either, but I have seen Spotlight. And much as I wanted Stallone to win, because he was great in Creed and he deserves it, Mark Ruffalo was brilliant. And I can't believe that this went to Mark Rylance.
I'm disagreeing with you on the Mark Ruffalo thing. I thought it was awful in it.
Really?
I really liked him.
The thing that got me about Mark Ruffalo is it sort of reminded me of Simple Jack, since he was doing it for seriously. You know, with that lip quiver and that weird accent, and he was yelling a lot as well. And I was not very surprised when the clip that we used was him in the office saying, "We need to release it now, blah, blah, blah." It was such an obvious performance. It was quite an Oscar-baity performance, in my opinion, and I just didn't like it. Whereas I have seen Bridge of Spies, and in all fairness, again, I chose who I thought would win, but I think Mark Rylance deserved it. He was fantastic in that film.
I think Stallone, it was the public opinion, wasn't it? I think people were backing him, but actually, if it comes down to, you know, acting, and then that's what this should come down to, you know, obviously Mark Rylance kind of blows Stallone out of the water. You know, give Stallone a Shakespeare. It's not going to happen, is it?
It would be amazing. That needs to happen. Him and Arnie and Carl Weathers do like Hamlet or something.
To be or not to be. Not to be.
That would be back. Oh, please, if anyone's listening, please. I would die a happy man.
Yeah, the National Theatre should make that happen. It's a shame their 50th anniversary just went, because that would have been the icing on the cake, wouldn't it? No, but Mark Rylance, I can't dispute him winning. He gave Tom Hanks a run for his money, and if you know, that's saying something. Tom Hardy, shocked he was even nominated, because he was appalling in The Revenant. Christian Bale, fair enough. You know, he was good in the role.
Well, he's been in a film, hasn't he? So they will nominate Christian Bale.
Yeah,
you know, it's like it's the Jennifer Lawrence effect. You know,
they've
done a film, they get nominated.
Yeah, but I just think that Mark Ruffalo did really well, and I don't necessarily know if he'll get the opportunity again, particularly for at the Oscars.
I don't know. Thor Ragnarok is coming up.
Oh, that's the big one.
I'm sure Ruffalo will get nominated again. This is like his third nomination about 4 years, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know.
Yeah, but I'd say he's been nominated 3 times now for this one. So I'm sure he'll be there again for a fourth time sooner than later.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forget he was in Foxcatcher, wasn't he?
And The Kids Who Are Right was the other one, I believe.
I suppose maybe. And I guess from the opposite side of that, you know, Rylance actually probably definitely won't get nominated again. You know, he's considerably older, and actually he probably will benefit the most from this. Stallone will be fine. You know, he's going to make Expendables 500. So
nobody. A lot of them there probably didn't even know he was.
Yeah,
you know, and it's even though he's one of our most distinguished actors, I do think he did a lovely, you know, dignified speech. Actually, his speech was probably the most nice and dignified one all night, actually. So I was like, yeah, I didn't want you to win, mate, but I'm glad in a way because you were very nice. Yes. So, you know, and he seemed genuinely surprised. But skipping that, we're going to move past best short documentary because nobody gives a shit, let's be honest. sorry to all those people who worked hard, but no.
Don't tell me you're going to do the same best foreign language film.
All these foreign films. we don't want any diversity here. This is the Oscars. Best documentary we didn't actually vote on, strangely enough, but that was between Cartel Land, The Look of Silence, What Happened, Miss Simone, Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom, starring Jared Leto, and not really. the winner, which was Amy. Now, I think that was perfectly right. I thought Amy was one of the best films last year, and I was really happy to see that win. And I think it was always going to, really.
Yeah, I think The Look of Silence is very good. It's actually on Netflix at the moment, so if anyone wants to check that out.
I saw Look of Silence last week, which is very good. Unfortunately, I've not seen Amy yet, but I've heard nothing but great things about it.
Yeah, same. I've heard What Happened, Miss Simone is supposed to be very good as well.
Yeah, me too, yeah. So that'll be those will be interesting to check out. Best short film was Ave Maria, Day One, Everything Will Be Okay, Shock and Stutterer, which won. Have any of you seen these?
Nope.
Yeah, of course I have. I did my homework. No, okay. Unfortunately not.
well done, Stutterer, but we'll move on. Best foreign language film. So this is Embrace of the Serpent, Mustang, Thebe, A War, and the winner, which was Son of Saul. Now, I'll be honest, I'm not a foreign language film buff at all. I don't really watch them. I'm not particularly interested. Do any of you?
I'm a foreign language buff, sort of, but it always takes me about 5 years after they've released to actually see it. So, hey, ask me again in 5 years'
time. Yeah, we'll ask you again which one should win, and then we'll surprise you by telling you it's Son of Saul. From what I've heard, that was pretty nailed on. It picked up most of the kind of big awards in that category. I think it picked up the Golden Globe and the BAFTA as well, so I think it was pretty nailed on.
Oh, fair play. Well done, Son of Saul. Then came Best Original Score. Now, this one was between Thomas Newman for Bridge of Spies, Carter Burwell for Carol, Johan Johansson for Sicario, John Williams for Star Wars The Force Awakens, and the winner was Ennio Morricone for The Hateful Eight. Now, Chris and I both said Morricone. Dan, where do you sit on this?
I didn't really have an opinion, but I'm glad it went to who it did. Because I Thomas Newman and John Williams are fantastic composers, but they've had their time in their day, and they've won enough of these that it's nice to get somebody a bit different.
Yeah, I was really glad that Morricone won. You know, we did on the composers, this is a shameless plug for a previous Black Hole Cinema episode, but on the composers we did Morricone recently, and we featured some of his music from The Hateful Eight. And, you know, his career is astounding. You know, he's done like 500 scores, and it's remarkable. Some of the music he's done, he's been wonderful. And even though this isn't his best score, of course, it's great to see him nominated and great to see him win. And, you know, in any other year, I'd have probably gone for John Williams. But his score for The Force Awakens was very good, but it wasn't classic Star Wars. So,
no. At the end of the day, it's the first time Morricone's won an Academy Award. He had an honorary one back in 2007. Mm. But for an actual score, it's the first time. So, I think that's the right person to give it to.
But it was good enough as well. That's the thing. It wasn't It was a really great, really good score. We'll skip Best Original Song.
Because we talked about that.
We did that earlier. Although, I think
that song is like a bucket of wet piss. Moving on.
Easily the best description of that song I will ever hear.
That's the tagline now.
That's the tagline. Bucket of
Listen
wet
to
piss.
The Black Hole Cinema.
I needed a tagline, actually. That's perfect. Like a bucket of wet piss. Moving on to the first of our final four big ones. This is Best Director. So this was between Adam McKay for The Big Short, George Miller for Mad Max Fury Road, Alejandro González Iñárritu for The Revenant, Tom McCarthy for Spotlight, and Lenny Abrahamson for Room. What did you go for, gents?
I'm not going to pronounce his name, but for Veverman.
How about you, Dan?
I think I put Alejandro as well, but I can't remember. Did I?
You didn't, actually.
We all went different, didn't we?
We all went for different ones.
I went Adam McKay.
You did. You went Adam McKay, and I said George Miller. I'm not surprised that Inarritu won, and in many respects, I don't mind, because I think... Well, I came out of this thinking that the Revenant pretty much won where it should have won. And, you know, as much as I would have, I think George Miller more than deserved it for Mad Max. I think that at the same time, The Revenant was a beautifully shot film. Yeah. I just think it was really a bit of a gutless decision. Miller should have won this tonight, because he's never probably going to be up here again now.
No.
You know, he's going to go off and make Happy Feet 6 probably next.
Yeah.
So it's like,
I think that, you know, the thing is that Inarritu won last year as well.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
To kind of win it 2 years in a row is a feat that's not been seen since the 1930s, I think. He wasn't in a tough category. The fact that we all picked different people, is... kind of says it all, really.
Yeah.
Those categories, you know, best picture, best director, and best writing, they're so tightly kind of connected that usually, you know, your top three or four films, it's usually nicely spread out across those categories, and that is exactly what happened pretty much this year. And usually best writing gives you... kind of an idea of who's going to go on to best film, best picture. It's not the norm for best picture and best director to be the same film. Usually spread across. So I would prefer him to win best director because I didn't want it to win best picture. However, it was the weakest film in that best director category by far.
It's interesting because it was a tight one. You know, that I think all of them. A lot of these main ones, in many respects, have been quite tight. Although, Best Actress, I'm not so sure about, because this was an interesting one. Best Actress was Cate Blanchett for Carol, Brie Larson for Room, Jennifer Lawrence for Joy, Charlotte Rampling for 45 Years, and Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Now, and I'm very happy I said her name right, because I've always got it wrong.
Saoirse Ronan. Yeah.
Saoirse Ronan. For this one, we all said different ones again. Chris, you went for Cate Blanchett. I went for Brie Larson, and Dan, you went for Jennifer Lawrence.
Just because I love her, I felt that someone should give her a vote. I don't think she deserved it, but you know.
I think with what I put down again, I went for who I thought would win, but I thought Brie Larson was the best. So.
I was overjoyed because she. I mean, obviously, she won the Golden Globe, didn't she? I think as well. I couldn't see past her for this.
I think Cate Blanchett, Jennifer Lawrence, they're both fantastic actresses, but I think Carol and Joy were substandard films. Saoirse Ronan, she'll have her time 10 times over.
Yeah. Brooklyn was a lovely film, actually. Yeah. And she was great in that, but yeah, not quite.
Charlotte Rampling, after her comments before running up to the Oscars, she was never going to win.
Yeah, she shot herself
in the foot. Anybody that put money on that before she said those comments probably thought, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I have a cash out early, please?
She wasn't going to win anyway. You'd have been an idiot to put your money on her.
Yeah. Oh, I remember when that film was on. Even the target audience were falling asleep. I'm glad I didn't put myself through that. And Brie Larson, you know, she was very good. I'm not necessarily sure what it will do for her, though. I don't necessarily think, whereas I said, Saoirse Ronan, Jennifer Lawrence, Cate Blanchett will see their names probably multiple times in the next 10 years. I'm wondering whether we'll ever see Brie Larson's name in that category again.
I suppose it depends on where her career goes for now. You know, I mean, she doesn't have the traditional elements that Blanchett and Lawrence do. You know, Jennifer Lawrence has that, you know, gorgeous girl next door thing going for her, in that she could slip into any franchise and any kind of movie. She could go from indie to mega blockbuster. Mm. Cate Blanchett kind of can do the same thing, but she has that kind of old school, you know, elegance to her, in that she can do things like Carol, and then, you know, rumour to be had, she's going to be the villain in Thor Ragnarok. So mm-hmm. she can flip between these things, but she has that sort of, you know, class to her. And you could say the same about Saoirse Ronan, actually, in years to come. That might come with her. So Brie Larson's a bit of an unknown quantity. It depends. It depends what she does. It's hard to predict.
I think Ronan's been very smart not to take any of the other big franchises.
Well, she dodged a bullet with Age of Ultron, didn't she? Because she was almost in that.
Yeah, because, well, less that, but it's more the fact that, you know, Jennifer Lawrence obviously got there first. You know, after the kind of whole Harry Potter kind of dominance, The Hunger Games was the next big thing. And she picked the right role, whereas Kristen Stewart is going to forever be known as that pouting, moody girl in Twilight.
Which is a shame, because she's not half as bad an actress as people make her out to be, actually.
No.
Yeah, I agree with that one.
You know, yeah.
Obviously, Divergent. I can't remember what's her name now. I've forgotten her.
Shailene Woodley.
Shailene Woodley. Again, she's very good. But unfortunately, she is in a god awful franchise.
Yeah,
that unfortunately, I've got to watch next in the next coming weeks.
Short straw, Dan. Short straw.
Yeah. and you know, you got Maze Runner. She could probably have quite easily got a role in that, and probably. Which she might have even raised the bar in that, in the fact that it would have taken that film to the next level. But again, it's kind of one of those ones that just jumped on the back of Hunger Games' success. And actually, it probably would have harmed her career more than not being in those.
Mm.
She can kind of go on now and wait for that franchise to come along. You know, I think the one franchise that actually would have propelled her even further would have been Star Wars. That would have been probably the only one that wouldn't have done her any harm.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where a few of these go. Definitely Brie Larson and Saoirse Ronan for sure. But not the strongest best actress category, really, I don't think, of years gone by. Best actor then was Matt Damon for The Martian, Michael Fassbender for Steve Jobs, Eddie Redmayne for The Danish Girl, Bryan Cranston for Trumbo, and Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant, who ended up winning. So you and I, Chris, both said Leo, and you went for Michael Fassbender, didn't you, Dan?
I did. I went for who I think, when I picked my picks, generally I went for who I thought deserved it, not necessarily who I thought was, or who I'd like to win, not necessarily who I thought was going to. And this category was another difficult one, because I think Eddie Redmayne kind of just got in there because of his previous success last year with The Theory of Everything. I don't necessarily know if he did enough to get in there above some of the other people that were snubbed. And Matt Damon was actually very good in The Martian.
Matt Damon!
Sorry. I've not seen Bryan Cranston in Trumbo, but Bryan Cranston. Yeah, you know, he's good in everything. And Leonardo DiCaprio has deserved this for so long. And I just think it's a shame that it's for something that's probably one of his worst films. And I'm sure there'll be people that would be disagreeing with that, because there are people that like The Revenant, but I thought it was 2.5 hours of excruciating boredom. And I don't necessarily think that much acting went into it from any of them, unless, you know, becoming unrecognisable in the fact that you can't, not unrecognisable, that's the wrong word, but being unable to actually hear them, if that's acting, then congratulations, you deserved it, and so did Tom Hardy, because I couldn't understand a word either of them said throughout the film.
Some Marlon Brando's style of acting.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, the one that was overlooked was Will Poulter. I thought he was the best thing about that film.
Yeah. I think the thing is with DiCaprio, I mean, it's great that he's got recognition. And, you know, he deserved it for many other roles.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad, you know, and I do like the guy as well as being actually a really good actor.
Yeah.
Much as his climate change was a little bit drum banging, but it wasn't bad compared to some of the ones we've had before.
Yeah.
And he does make a good point, to be fair, and he's absolutely right. But I think the thing is with The Revenant, it's one of those films. I was hugely impressed with it in a visual scale. You know, I think it was incredibly well made. Looked incredible. I would have loved to have seen it on the big screen, actually. I missed that. And DiCaprio's performance and the performance of quite a few of them, especially DiCaprio, it's less a performance than an endurance test. And I think mm-hmm. that the whole thing with what happened to Hugh Glass in the real world, even though it's not a direct, you know, adaptation of what actually what happened, I think it gets to the guts of that whole pure endurance. You know, the filming, the shoot, from what we hear, was brutal, you know, and they actually really quite suffered. Almost got like hypothermia or whatever. I think really he deserved it. I think Fassbender was brilliant, and I think he incorporated an absolute arsehole really well. Matt Damon was great as well, even much as I would have put Michael B. Jordan in here. Matt Damon was really good, you know, carried away. But I think DiCaprio, for what he went through and the kind of naturalistic acting he did, because it's not a performance, it's not a showy performance, it's a naturalistic piece of drama that he has to endure. I think he deserved it for that. It's not his best role in terms of what he can do as an actor, but I think to not give him it for what he went through would have been a shame for me.
Well, I think there would have been, you know, mobs in the street had he not won, to be fair.
Oh, yeah.
But Fassbender will probably get his time again.
Oh, he will. He'll get one.
You know, he's very careful. He very carefully picks his roles. And
Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, even though he's immersed into these franchises, X-Men, Assassin's Creed, you know, being two, and I'm sure there'll be another one, you know, he's continued to do good work around those, you know, going back to doing stuff like Shame, and, you know, he will continue to do it, but from somebody that's such a big Leonardo DiCaprio fan, I wanted... You know, particularly if this is his only Oscar, then I will die very unhappy because I think he's capable of a lot better. And you know, roles he's nominated for, roles he wasn't nominated for in the past, he gave better performances. And I completely appreciate your point. Yeah, the endurance is incredible, but you know, the crew. It was cold for them as well.
true. Yeah. It's a good point. It will be an interesting one to debate, really, in terms of that. But, yeah, it was a good category. It was a good category with some strong, you know, people in there. Finally, then, Best Picture, which is the big one, the big final one. We all had different ones for this. The nominees were The Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max Fury Road, which I went for, The Martian, The Revenant, which you went for, Chris, Room, and Dan, you went for Spotlight, which was ultimately the winner. And I've got to say, I was quite shocked, and pleasantly shocked, admittedly, but I didn't think Spotlight would win this. I thought this was going to be The Revenant.
I wish I'd put money on it, because I was quite sure. But as I said previously, I did pick what I think, in my opinion, was the best and what I would like to win. You know, this was one of the categories where actually I was quite sure it would go on and win it as well. Particularly because, as I said, I'm just so anti-Revenant that I was trying to convince myself that it wouldn't win anything. That was foolish because obviously it was going to win something, but I'm glad it didn't win Best Picture.
Chris, are you pro-Revenant then?
Well, yes. Yeah, I was about to say, out of all the films nominated, Revenant's probably my second favourite film of them all, because Room was my favourite overall. I just thought it was an incredible piece of cinema, basically. And everything's done said, I'm the opposite, I think.
Why are you not arguing with me then?
That is why I've got you both on. That's why it's perfect. I'm the middle man. Yeah.
I was about to say, I thought the performances were great. It's sort of been like, it's one of the cinematography for a reason. I just think it's just such a well put together film, but I thought it deserved it, and I thought it was going to win, and I lost quite a bit of money on it, betting on it, so I'm quite mad.
I said Fury Road, but I didn't really think in my heart of hearts it was going to do it. I just wanted it to do it, really. But I'd seen Spotlight just last week, and I was just blown away by it, really. I thought it was tremendous. And I was, you know, better than The Revenant for me. And I was, you know, Not better than Mad Max, because that's still my favourite film of last year, but I think it's a very, very different film from either of them, really, especially Mad Max. And for what it said and what it did and for some of the performances, you know, I was delighted to see it win, really. And, you know, there could be an accusation that it won because it was about something very, very, you know, difficult, close to the bone. It, again, can make a point, you know. Mark Ruffalo went and hung out with people who'd been abused just before the ceremony, that kind of thing. But I think it had merit to win, so I'm quite pleased. Although, you know, it was a good category. It was a good set of films in here. I'm not sure The Martian deserved to be here, really, but it, good as that was.
The thing is, it brings a different kind of slant on it. You know, Spotlight, The Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, The Revenant, Room, they're all kind of serious films. And The Martian, and I'm not saying Mad Max isn't a serious film, but...
It's not a serious film, really.
Yeah. Bonkers. So, okay, so those two are there from that kind of... You know, the Golden Globe, they split it in two on purpose. You know, the Oscars doesn't have to do that because it can have up to, I guess, 9 nominations.
Yeah.
So it can afford to kind of put in those films that they're not going to win, but they can go, you know, they can be nominated, and, you know, that's a showing of appreciation in itself.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. I think that's very
true. I think this is the first time that two live-action films have been nominated that are both blockbusters as well. Am I thinking that?
I can't remember.
I know 2010 was Inception and Toy Story 3, but I'm not sure you can count Toy Story 3 for being animated, but I think this is the first time where there's been two blockbusters in there, which... I think it's quite interesting that we've done that. I thought it would have been one or the other.
Yeah. I mean, I've got to be honest. I do suspect that if Mad Max hadn't had such a wave of both critical and fan love, it might not have got in, really. I think it sailed in through that, really, through the pressure of people going, fuck all these serious dramas. This is the best film of the year. You know, and, you know, there's a debate. There'd be a debate among a lot of people whether it is. I think it is, personally. I think it's better than any of them, if I'm honest. But it's unfair to say that in some respect because they're all very different, you know, and it's...
It definitely is one that goes into my, you know, top five of 2015. And I was talking about it with someone the other day about how I almost have two lists when I look... at best films of the year or best films of all time. I've got films that are my favourite and are special and that I really enjoyed for, you know, the pure thrill of it. And then there's kind of almost a slightly more critical list where they're in there for slightly different reasons. And while you go in there and you like them and you think they're good films, you don't necessarily come out enjoying them and like whooping and getting foghorns out and going on Twitter and speaking about how the best film of all time. You know, I think you can have those kind of two different types of views.
No, I think that's true. So that's another year done, another Oscars in the bag. I dare say, well, I hope to think. Gents, we'll be back in 2017 for our fourth annual Oscar special. Why not?
We'll be here to talk about Will Smith's great victory for Best
Actor. Imagine if that happens.
Well, I do think we will get more than one black nominee, you know, and I just hope it's on merit. I just hope it's for films that are really good enough to be up there and it's not just a PR stunt.
Yeah. Well, next year it'll be the hashtag Oscars so black.
It's true. Started it here. Yeah, you heard it here first.
Yeah. No, but I've not really had a serious look through, you know, what, you know, might be coming up next year, you know, outside of the blockbusters. So I can't really say if there's going to be any kind of performances that are going to deserve it, let alone just in there for merit. So
it's a bit early,
usually that doesn't come around till like September. Yeah. So maybe I'll look at it again then.
I'm calling it now. Batman v Superman, best picture. If Mad Max can get there, so can that.
What you mean for Razzie?
Yes.
I'm fully anticipating it to be a train wreck.
Yeah. But we'll get there. That's for another podcast.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, guys, for joining me for this. First off, Dan, where can we find you around online?
You can find me on Twitter, at Dan Thomas Taylor, and hopefully over the next few months I'll be submitting some blog pieces for the Black Hole Cinema blog.
That'd be great if you do. Looking forward to those. Chris, how about you? Where can we find you?
Well, I keep deleting everything.
I know, I keep having to unfollow random people.
You because... never know. He is the shadow, Chris, I think.
Yeah, I'm the shadow of you.
Just a hunt. Easter egg hunt. But yeah, we'll be back for more Black Hole Cinema coming up very soon. The Composers is still going on for a few more parts. And we will have brand new episodes, as Dan said at the start of the podcast, coming up at the end of the month, middle of the month and the end of the month. So look out for those. And you can find us at Twitter, on Twitter, at Black Hole Cinema. And you can find us at part of Black Hole Media, at Black Hole Media. And yeah, just as I said before, go on iTunes, try and find us, subscribe. That'd be great, because we will be back for more episodes soon. So until then, thanks again, gents.
Thank you.
And we will see you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.